لبيك يا نصر الله، 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 لبيك يا نصر الله.
Try and speak as briefly as I can about this new strategy. The new Zionist strategy was announced time and again by the former Israeli foreign minister called Silvan Shalom. Now, Shalom, the former Israeli foreign minister, said that we will do our utmost, we will do the best we can to put the whole international community against Hezbollah, in confrontation with Hezbollah. And he added that we will do our best to adopt international resolutions to put an end to Hezbollah, to finish Hezbollah. He also said that we will commit ourselves to representing Hezbollah as a terrorist organization in the eyes of the international community. And actually, the Zionists did go ahead with these efforts and took these steps. There were many countries which answered and reacted positively to the Zionist requests and put Hezbollah on the terrorist list, terrorist organization list, such as the USA. After the year 2000, other countries reacted positively to this Israeli request and put Hezbollah on its list of terrorist organizations, such as Holland. But there were certain countries which refused to take such a step, such as France. There were countries which refused at the beginning, such as Britain. But what Britain did, it said that there was political and military wing. We saw the latest British step, which was taken, which announced dialogue with Hezbollah's political wing. The Zionists did their best, strived to convince the governments of the world to put Hezbollah on the list of terrorist organizations. And the efforts really were vigorous. This is not an analysis. This is what was said by Silvan Shalom, the former Israeli foreign minister. Shalom said that Israel created the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1559 in the UN. Now, some Lebanese might have contributed in adopting this resolution in an indirect or in a deliberate or undeliberate way. I don't want to accuse anyone of betrayal, but some might have contributed in some way or another in the adoption of UN Security Council Resolution 1559 without knowing the real Israeli aims. The common interests inside and outside Lebanon led to Resolution 1559, but Silvan Shalom confesses that Resolution 1559 primarily was an Israeli creation, and he put the resistance under a lot of pressure. We saw what happened, the events which happened after Resolution 1559. Or before that, actually, the 11th of September, the occupation of Afghanistan, the occupation of Iraq, the assassination of former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri, and then the withdrawal of the Syrian troops from Lebanon, the elections which happened after that. And then we saw the current political team, the what we call the March 14 team, in power. Ever since that period of time, in spite of our four-way alliance, in spite of the fact that we held dialogue with other factions, in spite of the fact that we cooperated, the main aim of March 14 with the ruling majority was the weapons of resistance, disarming the resistance. Now, actually, there was division. Some spoke about disarming the resistance, and others spoke about the resistance turning its weapons in. So it's kind of a difference in rhetoric. Both types of rhetoric were used by the March 14 alliance. Disarming means using force to rid Hezbollah of its arms. Some in March 14 spoke about disarming Hezbollah, and they really wanted to actually disarm Hezbollah. Others said, no, we will not impose such a decision by force, because they knew very well, they knew extremely well, that Hezbollah's arms cannot be taken by force. So they spoke about Hezbollah giving its arms in, or turning in its arms to the state. Okay, now then we came to the elections. Ever since the year 2005 until now, whenever we sit with any Lebanese politician, whenever we sit with any foreign delegation, the only issue raised is the arms of the resistance, as if there is no other problem in Lebanon except for the weapons of the resistance. All Lebanese must be preoccupied with this issue. No economic problems, no financial crisis, no living problems for the people in Lebanon, countries or areas in the country or territories which have been neglected, nothing of this. The only problem we have is Hezbollah's arms. All this debt on Lebanon, it's no problem. Occupation of land, no problem. No detainees in Israeli prisons. Israeli violations of Lebanese sovereignty don't exist. As if there is no problem whatsoever from all these problems which I mentioned. As if the only main issue we are facing is the arms of the resistance. These arms liberated Lebanon from the biggest Israeli invasion, which happened in 1982. The whole discussion, all of the dialogue, all of the deliberations focused on one issue, on one topic. And this, so whoever wants to reevaluate, to revise what happened previously, one of the biggest mistakes committed by the March 14 alliance, by the ruling majority, was this focus only on the arms of the resistance. Even when we sat in private, we said, go and solve the problems of the people, poverty, neglect, make people in all Lebanon feel that you are responsible for them, a responsible government. Speak about the army, and then you'll find people take sides with you against us. But it seems that their program or their agenda didn't give all that time, didn't have all that time. And as we heard during the last few days, yes, there were pledges made to solve the issue of the arms of Hezbollah, to solve it by force, to solve it by dialogue. This is another subject. But it seems that the time which was given to them to accomplish this mission was limited time. On the other hand, how did we react? We called for dialogue. And the comment or the slogan of a national defense strategy, this term was adopted by Hezbollah. The calls for national dialogue, for adopting or for agreeing on a national defense strategy, was also a Hezbollah proposal. This was also specified in the understanding made between Hezbollah and the Free Patriotic Movement headed by Michel Aoun. So we said, let's go to the table and begin with dialogue. We felt, during the last few years, very frankly, we felt that some don't have any concern concerns how to protect Lebanon, or how to protect Lebanon, or how to liberate the rest of Lebanon's territories or detainees. How do we confront the Israeli violations and the Israeli threats? The only concern was how to take these arms away from Hezbollah. What happens after that is not important. This is how we felt. This is the approach we felt was being taken. This mentality made Lebanon be such an unstable place for decades, not answering the question, how do we protect Lebanon? How do we protect the people of Lebanon? How do we defend Lebanon and the sovereignty? How do we hold on to Lebanon's territories, to Lebanon's water? The answer was always, Lebanon's strength is in its weakness. And the invasions continued until the Israelis ridiculed us. You remember what happened in the 1967 war? They really ridiculed us. The Joint Chief of Staff in the Israeli Army was asked a question at that time. He said, we have this army for Jordan, this one for Syria, this one for Egypt, this one for the West Bank, for Gaza. How will Israel handle Lebanon? We don't see any Israeli military contingents going to Lebanon. He said, no, it's enough to send a musical group to Lebanon, a group playing music. So what made Lebanon to be the strongest part of the equation in this current conflict? What made Lebanon not fear, and what made Lebanon be ready to confront, is not a musical parade, 5 or 100 musical parades or Israeli armies. They cannot do anything. Your resistance was the resistance in Lebanon was the one which prevented Israel from achieving its aims. The rhetoric of weakness was not able to put a stop to this. The rhetoric of surrender was not what prevented Israel from achieving its aims. But they always don't answer these questions which we ask. Anyway, we were subject to a lot of pressures in private meetings, in public, on the media. Psychological wars were waged against us. We had threats, indirect threats being directed towards us, foreign pressures being practiced against us, but we held on to our right. We held on to our faith. We continued with our resistance. We continued to hold on to our arms. And after the period of despair, after we found that the political approach will not achieve anything, we saw the July 2006 war. The aim of a July 2006 war was to crush the resistance and to crush the popular support which stands side by side with the resistance. The July 2006 war failed with God's help, and also because of your perseverance and because of your sacrifices and your courage and the perseverance of the resistance fighters, the Mujahideen. And after the July 2006 war, we came back to the same old story once again. Resistance, weapons of resistance, how are we going to deal with the arms of resistance? Arms of resistance must be turned in, as if after the July 2006 war, after all the harm done to Lebanon, after all the developments which witnessed in the region, and in light of all the problems in the country and the political crisis, in the midst of all this, as if there is no problem except for the arms of the resistance. My dear brothers and sisters, listen, 3 years ago, after the July 2006 war, Israel confessed that it had been defeated. And Israel tried to address its problems. For 3 years, Israel has been training and has been holding military maneuvers. And just in a few days' time, on May 31st, it will hold maneuvers throughout its entity. And Israel is getting new arms and new warplanes. Israel is not in need of more air force power, but in spite of this, it's getting more air force power. Israel is working day and night to regain its influence as a strong military power, and the resistance which defeated Israel for 3 years is concerned with defending every day and arguing every day and debating every day with those who call on it to disarm. Every day we're preoccupied with defending our position of holding on to our arms. Where's the justice? Where's the logic? Where's the patriotism? Where's the nationalism? Israel is getting ready And Lebanon is not doing anything. All we hear in Lebanon is calls to disarm Hezbollah. Lebanon is not doing anything to strengthen the army, to give arms to the army. We don't have any progress in drawing a real strong national defense strategy. On the contrary, Israel is addressing its weaknesses, its weak points, which were discovered in the July 2006 war. And here in Lebanon, some are trying to destroy the advantages of Hezbollah, which were able to bring about victory in the July 2006 war. Time and again, this has happened. Now, let's speak in a responsible manner. We always said that the build a strong state and a strong army which can protect the country, then we'll be relaxed, we'll be in a better position. But who is ready? The question is, who is ready to finance an army, to arm the Lebanese army? After all the experiences we went through, we all know that America and the West and the majority of the countries of the world and the Arab countries are not ready to arm the Lebanese army against Israel. These stories we hear that if we give weapons to the army, these weapons will fall into the hands of Hezbollah. This is imaginary talk. This is a trick, actually, when they speak in this way, because they know that the resistance has enough weapons. It does not need weapons from a Lebanese army. Hezbollah has enough weapons. The resistance, which pledges to destroy the military contingents of the Israeli army in South Lebanon, does not need the weapons which America gives anyone in Lebanon. The main reason they don't want to give weapons to the Lebanese army is that America does not accept to give Lebanon's army weapons to fight Israel. This is the only reason. They don't want the Lebanese army to use weapons to fight Israel. And the same goes for the other countries. We even thank the Russian government. Previously, we haven't thanked Russia, but the MiG warplanes, how can they contribute? Whoever wants to really help Lebanon, today we have very important countries who don't buy warplanes because there's no balance of power in Air Force strength with Israel. Whoever wants really a strong Lebanese army must have anti-aircraft missiles, anti-tank missiles, anti-shield missiles, long-range, medium-range missiles. This is the way you have a balance of power, because we cannot counter Israel from the air. We have to rely on missiles. This is the way we can defend Lebanon against the strength of the Israeli army. Who is ready to give such weapons to the Lebanese army? Let me tell you. Why don't you elect the opposition, and I'll tell you who's ready to give Lebanon such weapons, who's ready to give the Lebanese army such weapons. Did the Lebanese government request, for example, did it request from our brothers in Syria weapons? Did it request weapons from Syria, weapons or rockets or military capabilities? And did Syria refuse such a request? No. We also mentioned Iran. Of course, I monitored the visit of Lebanese President Michel Suleiman to Tehran. Iran did not propose giving weapons to Lebanon. This is right, yes. It didn't, and it cannot. It cannot propose giving weapons to Lebanon. It won't even make such a proposal. Iran wouldn't make such a proposal. But until now, Lebanon has not requested weapons from Iran. Lebanon hasn't made such a request. It's not logical for Iran to make such a proposal. It's not even doing that, and they always accuse the Iranian President Ahmadinejad of meddling in Lebanese affairs. So what if it made a proposal? If Iran says, I want to arm the Lebanese army, do you want rockets, missiles, anti-aircraft missiles, anti-shield missiles? If such an approach is taken, many in Lebanon will say, Iran wants Lebanon to go into war. Iran wants Lebanon to be part of the Syrian-Iranian axis by arming the Lebanese army. So nobody should wait for Iran to make a proposal of giving arms to the Lebanese army. But any Lebanese government? Has it ever asked Iran for weapons? Did it ever say, we are targeted by Israel, we want a strong army, nobody is giving arms to our Lebanese army, we want beneficial, capable weapons, beneficial and capable weapons? Of course, Biden came and brought with him a few tanks. What are these tanks worth? A few missiles, a few trucks? What does such equipment benefit? We, if Lebanon goes to Iran and requests such weapons, then we will see what Iran could do. Would Iran provide assistance or not? I know the answer, but I don't want to say. And you all know the answer as well. What I know is that the Islamic Republic of Iran, and especially the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, will not refuse a request for Lebanon. Iran will do whatever it can to make Lebanon a strong, capable state, and unconditionally, Iran will do so without any conditions. I would like to tell you that if the alliance of the opposition is successful in the upcoming parliamentary elections, and if a national unity government is formed, all of us in the opposition, and especially Hezbollah, which is accused of not wanting a strong army, unfortunately, but the opposition, and especially Hezbollah, we will all implement our program and agenda, and we will strive to make the Lebanese National Army a strong armed force. An army which is capable of defending Lebanon. Some say, okay, the weapons which you have, the weapons which you possess, the resistance, give these weapons to the army. They call on the resistance to give their weapons to the army. This is a mistake. You know, the weapons we use are not good for a traditional, conventional army. Our armies or our weapons are used for a popular resistance. Our weapons being in the hands of a traditional army will not lead to any balance of power with the Israelis. The value of these weapons is that it is in the hands of a popular resistance, which has its own warfare tactics, its own organization, its own culture, its own secret way of doing things. So a traditional, conventional army, an army of a state under a political authority, cannot work in the same way a resistance works. And so for this reason, even if we gave our weapons to the army, this won't enable the Lebanese army to defend Lebanon. So these weapons are only appropriate against Israel when they are in the hands of a popular resistance. So the most important thing, my dear brothers and sisters, is that we have a clear conviction amongst the Lebanese politicians and amongst the Lebanese political factions that we want a strong Lebanese army, and that some really, honestly, have abandoned the rhetoric and the theory of Lebanon's strength is in its weakness. My dear brothers and sisters, this is a challenge for the resistance, and these challenges still continue. The military war which we are being threatened with by the Zionists, this possibility still exists, although it's a remote possibility. After the failure of the July 2006 war, they know very well, and here I'm speaking to the friend and the enemy, they know very well that the Israeli military war wasn't able before and won't be able in the future to destroy the resistance in Lebanon. So, most probably, they will continue with these efforts, and here I mean the efforts of assassinations, similar to what happened with Hezbollah's former top military commander, Imad Mughniyeh. And this explains to us the magnitude, the huge number of spies in Lebanon, which are looking for targets, people, places to target, spies working for Israel. But the main, the biggest and the most dangerous challenge is what we are confronting today. And in brief, what we are confronting today is a continuation of the Silvan Shalom strategy after the year 2000. It means resorting to presenting Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, an organization which attacks countries, which attacks people, which threatens world security, which threatens world order, and most importantly, most dangerously, trying to accuse Hezbollah of assassinating the former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri to bring about a sectarian conflict in Lebanon. So what we heard just a few days ago from the Der Spiegel magazine, I'd like to stress to you, my dear brothers and sisters, it is true that officials came out and said that such a plot was drawn up in Beirut, that this plot began in Beirut. This might be true, just the same as UN Security Council Resolution 1559. But the information we've received in the last few days is that this report from Der Spiegel is an Israeli report, and that this accusation to Hezbollah is an Israeli accusation of killing Prime Minister Hariri. And you heard how Israel quickly manipulated the Der Spiegel magazine. And read also what was said by the Israeli officials, the Israeli statements. Israeli statements which say that, hey, they have ties to the international investigation into the assassination of Rafiq Hariri. Let's be very, very frank. Ever since the year 2000 and after the defeat of the Zionists and after the victory achieved by the resistance in Lebanon, after this, many are trying to harm the resistance and the support of the resistance and the environment of the resistance. Some are trying to turn world opinion against the resistance. Some are trying in different ways, by security means, military means, to harm the resistance. And some are also trying to make the international investigation into the assassination of Hariri, they are trying to make this investigation focus on Hezbollah, because there are no more tricks up their sleeve. What can they do of Hezbollah? How do we deal with Hezbollah? We assassinated Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, nothing happened. We assassinated Haj Imad Mughniyi, we also weren't able to harm Hezbollah. We destroyed the homes of their supporters. Also, we didn't achieve our aims. We saw the war of 1993, 1996, the Grapes of Wrath, the July 2006 war. We didn't achieve anything in our war against Hezbollah. We are fighting a unique resistance, a resistance which can be described as Sayyid Abbas Musawi said, and as Imam Khomeini said, kill us, but our people will be more and more vigilant and will turn more and more against you. The worst thing they can do, the worst thing anyone can do against us or against you, against our women and children and our men and our elderly, what's the worst thing they can do to threaten us with death? And our answer is always ready. Not just Hezbollah. From a very long time ago, go back hundreds of years, we have been fed this milk. We've been fed this culture by the milk of our mothers. Throughout history, we tell all of those people who threaten us, who threaten to kill us, we tell them, are you threatening me with death? Death for us is something normal, and dignity for us is martyrdom. They have realized very well. They have realized very well that the killers and the massacres which were committed and the assassinations and the destroying of the homes and the incitement, all of these means will not achieve anything with Hezbollah and the Islamic resistance and the glorious supporters of this resistance. المقاومة. So what's left for them? What's the last trick up their sleeve? To accuse Hezbollah of being behind an assassination, to picture Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, sectarian incitement against Hezbollah. Of course, now, as I said, the most dangerous plot is to accuse Hezbollah of being behind the assassination of Rafiq Hariri. Yes, of course, we have been through a very, very difficult stage recently, but with God's help and due to the vigilance of the leadership and the officials, and due to the Israeli rhetoric after the Der Spiegel report, the Israeli rhetoric which quickly tried to take advantage of such information, and the responsible stance taken by Lebanon, due to this we were able to confront this dangerous period. But the challenge still exists, because there are certain people who insist on continuing to go on the same path, on continuing with the same behavior, because there is no other way, no other means to use against Hezbollah. God willing, by unity, by cooperation, by understanding, by wisdom, we will be able to exit this crisis with our heads hung high, just like we did in all previous conflicts and all previous problems we faced. And I assure you, yes, after June the 7th, after June the 7th, the elections, we want a national unity government. We want cohesion. We want understanding. We want collaboration. And even if we re-evaluated the past, such a revision of the past is not to open the wounds once again, but to learn lessons. We look into the past to learn lessons. Even in the resistance and its weapons, we support the continuation of dialogue. Some say if the opposition is victorious, the national dialogue will end. No, we support a continuing of the national dialogue, because we want a national defense strategy, a real national defense strategy, which the state is committed to and which the people and the resistance is committed to. The other topic which I'd like to speak about is the Biqa and the state. Concerning the Biqa and the neglect, the question, the big question is, which is the key to all deliberations, is the Lebanese state as a state, and the governments which came into power, do they consider that Biqa is a part of Lebanon or not? Do they consider Biqa as being Lebanese territories? Is Biqa Lebanon, or is it the son of some other neighboring country? Is it a son of Lebanon which has been born and forgotten? This is an answer which must be given to the Lebanese government. This is something which must be asked to all Lebanese officials ever since Lebanon was founded. The main problem is, and this problem is not just with the Biqa, it's with Biqa and Aqqar and the north, the Christians and Muslims of the north and the south, and all of the different sides. All of the different Lebanese politicians must ask this question. You remember in the past few years, some told the people of the Biqa that the main problem is your political choices. You are being punished because of the political choices you have made, because you support Hezbollah. You are being punished because you support the resistance. These were lies, because before 1982, there was no Hezbollah. And then they asked a question, before 1982, you were with Imam Musa Sadr. What about before 1960? There was no Imam Musa Sadr at that time. 1948, ever since, Biqa has become part of Lebanon. This Biqa has been neglected, has been forgotten. During the ceremony which was held in South Lebanon, I quoted what was said by Imam Abd al-Hussein Sharaf al-Din. The importance of the quote is not just because it was said by Sharaf al-Din, it's because of his history. He's a very important historic figure in Lebanon. Today, I will also quote Sayyid Abd Hussein Sharaf al-Din, a letter he sent to Bashar al-Khoury, who was a former Lebanese president. At that time, we witnessed a problem in the Biqa' area. And so one of the members of the tribes went to the Hirmil mountainous area. At that time, the Lebanese state then disarmed appointed a military force to track down these tribes, and we were about to see a big confrontation between the tribes in the Biqa' and the Lebanese military, the Lebanese army. Mr. Abdul Hussein Sharaf al-Din sent a letter to the then Lebanese president Bashar al-Khoury on September 1949, I repeat. He says, and I quote, "The tribes of the Hirmil and the Biqa' were forced to flee. And why do we see this hunting down of the tribes? Why are you using this big, big military force from the Lebanese army to track down these tribes? You are known." And listen to what Sayyid Abdul Hussein says. He says, "The people of the Biqa', are they not part of Lebanon? Aren't they living in your territories? In this very, very important period of time." So Sayyid Sharaf al-Din was criticizing the neglect of the people of Biqa'. Aren't these people part of a country? Of course, these people were left to be eaten away, disease.
Okay, let's leave that speech there. That's Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah speaking, the leader.